Wizards ICT, www.wizardsict.com. We have all of your tabletop wargaming, board games, and comic book needs that you could have or want. We will fill them for you. We offer discounts of 10 to 20% on every single order. And if your order goes over $100, we will ship it to you for free. We carry most of the top 40 board games, most of the top tabletop war games, and Marvel and DC Comics, and a lot of independent books. So if you're looking for a comic book subscription, you're looking for a new board game to try out, you're looking to fill that Warhammer army out with some new models, we can help you out. Check us out at www.wizardsict.com. Hope to hear from you soon. Wizardsict.com, and shoot us an email. We'll let you know if we have it, if we can get it, and we will get it to you. Let this help you get your geek on.
All right, everybody, welcome back. This is the Iron Realms podcast with your host, Buck. I've got Ryan and Paul with me today. What up, Ryan?
Hello.
And Paul.
How's it going?
So it's been about another 2 weeks since we've done this. So, Ryan, what have you been up to since then?
Hobby-wise, really nothing. I was using an event that happened yesterday, hoping that gets me motivated. So, and it looks like it's going to.
Yeah, I saw one of your Gargants is missing an arm. What's up with that?
Billy broke his arm. That's what I think happened.
I'll tell you, but he was on a scenery piece that was 4 inches shorter, and he took a tumble off. And I mean, it was, for the record, it was planned because I lightly glued those arms on because I wanted to be able to take them off to paint them if it looked like it needed to be, because, you know, models, if you can't really get to certain areas that easily. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's that. He will be repaired.
So, anything else?
Nah, that's it.
Damn. All right. What about you, Paul?
Well, I got the Ender 3B2, 2 weeks ago, something like that. So I've been really into, been sprinting a lot of little things, working with Tinkercad now to kind of fuse models together and make my own stuff and adjust stuff other people have made. I enjoy that. And I don't know, doing my first train piece print right now, a lighthouse from Printable Scenery, but enjoying, you know, getting through some of the learning curve at the beginning of some of the early failures. And mm-hmm. Now it's running quite a bit smoother. Now that I have learned how to, what to not to do, kind of, how to adjust everything so that if you don't have as many failures there. But
yeah, it's one of those things where you can read all you want about it, but you need to, you know, actually do it.
Yeah.
Fail to really learn.
What's funny is one of my buddies has the same printer, and there was two things he warned me about. Like, one was like, you really have to put the Bowden tube into the hot end very hard, very firmly, otherwise you get a clog. And another thing he was telling me was like how to tighten the extruder knob so that it gets a good push. And both of them I thought I did, and then those were failures. And then finally I figured out, oh, I didn't understand exactly what he was telling me, so I ended up having to still learn the lesson myself, that kind of stuff. But so that's pretty cool. I'm enjoying that. Then did a little bit of painting on my ancient two-headed Leviathan turtle. So it was for the tournament this week. And put a little bit of paint on my shadow stalkers so that they weren't completely gray. I painted their capes. But
okay.
I guess that's not really. And then I used my gift card to buy some more Flesh Eater stuff. So maybe one of these days I'll play Flesh Eaters.
Actually play Flesh Eaters.
Mm-hmm. You got to get up to like 5K before you could actually play a game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe by that time they'll be OP again.
They'll be good again.
Yeah.
No, I'll make them good. I think they can be good. I'll figure out a way.
Cool. Me, what have I done? I did a little kit bash with some of my KO models. I got a box of AdMech Taraxi. Is that what they're called? I don't know. The dudes with the wings, and yeah. Put those on the back of some engine riggers in replace of their little metal balloon. And I got to say, these look so much better. Like, I absolutely love it. And I'm looking at getting one of the Admech boats, or I guess it's not a boat, gunship or whatever, with the bigger wings to use for like the frigates and other things. And now I'm kind of kicking myself for putting all those boats together, because these look so much cooler. But I'll do that and see how that goes. Other than that, I got the Cursed City box game, put all those models together, played a couple games now. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And I think it's one of those games too that I think we'll get a lot of people to play it that don't necessarily, you know, want to play Age of Sigmar or anything like that, but might be just enough to get them hooked. So it's super smooth. It's really fun. I watched a couple videos before really playing just to kind of get the idea down behind it. A lot of people said it's similar to Blackstone Fortress, which I've never played. So kind of just starting fresh with this game. And the first game I played, we did it wrong. And when you roll your dice, each success, even if you roll multiple dice, you only take the best roll, right? I missed that part in the rule book when I was reading through it initially. And I basically killed all their characters like the first run through. I was like, what the fuck? This game sucks. There's no way you can beat it. And then
the strong, yeah.
I was like, oh. Whoops. And so it's gone a lot better since then. I mean, there's been some games where we got pretty close to getting pretty beat up and you know, a character had maybe one wound left or something before we completed the journey. But yeah,
have you just played it solo so far, or have you tried it with
So I did it solo. Friend. But I've been playing with my wife and friends of ours. Okay. So yeah, they've all enjoyed it. But yeah, so it's been fun. I think it's going to be one of those games that, you know, it seems like GW kind of backtracked on saying they were supporting it. And I hope that's not true, because you can really see how this game is designed for a huge amount of expansions. So, yeah, really, really looking forward to see what comes out of that. Other than that, that's pretty much it. So I'm going to let you guys talk about your Edmund tournament and, you know, just give us a rundown on all that. Start off with Ryan, and you and Paul go back and forth. I actually got to take a call real quick. So you guys just do that, and I'll hop back in when I can, okay?
Okay.
Cool.
So, Ryan, how about you talk game one, and then I'll talk my game one, and we'll just go from there.
That's yeah, do it by missions. That's a good idea. So, just so everybody knows, the first mission we had was Star Strike. It's the one where the objectives don't start falling until the second round, and then they fall. You roll and they drop, and then you got to play for them. So I was paired up against round one with Scott Sproul, who was running Doc. I was running Giants, Taker Tribe, Breaker Tribe. I had a Gatebreaker. I had a Kraken Eater. Gatebreaker was my general. Louder Than Words, which gives him +2 to his flail attack. Enchanted Portcullis as his artifact, because we weren't allowed to take realm artifacts. And his command trait, Fierce Loathing was Bossy Pants and Clever Cogs, which add 1 to hit versus heroes, which I am probably going to change after this, but I'll talk about that later. Scott was playing Daughters of Cain, Hagnar. He had a Hag Queen on Blood Cauldron, which is 220 points, but should be more.
Let me stop you real quick. I'm going to have to leave. We had an emergency at the clinic, so I got to go. Right. You guys just finish out the podcast. When you're done, you can hop off. I'll have everything, so don't worry about it, okay?
Okay.
All right, man.
All right. Bye.
See you. So, he had a... I'll start over so that way. Okay.
Ooh, there's a new Night Haunt. It looks new Night Haunt to me. Maybe it's not. Sorry,
no, go ahead. That's not Night Haunt. That's Lumineth. I guarantee you. Okay, because of the owl on top. That's what makes me think of it. sorry, folks. We got photos from like breaking right news. So Scott was running Daughters of King Hagnar, Blood Queen on Cauldron, Hag Queen on Cauldron, Hag Queen on foot, Marathi, and then the Shadow Queen. So that's a wonderful combination. 20 Witch Elves, 10 Witch Elves, 10 Witch Elves, 10 Blood Stalkers, 5 Canary, 5 Canary, 9 Shadow Stalkers, and the Cauldron Guard. So his basic setup is he had the 20, the Cauldron, the foot, the Bloods, pretty much everything in the middle at the start of his deployment. And I split up my Giants. I put my Taker on one, my Kraken Eater on one side, and my Gatebreaker on another side of the board, because I figured I'm just going to fight for 2. I'm not even going to bother going for 3. Mm-hmm. I got pretty, we rolled off. He chose, I won the priority, so I gave it to him to go first, because there's no way I'm getting into him, and nor my entire goal this tournament, I was like, I'm not going to be aggressive. I'm going to play the objectives. I'm going to just see what happens. So started off, we basically stared at each other the first round because there were no objectives on the board. So we're not moving towards each other. We just didn't see a point until we know what was happening. So the first one lands right in front of where my Kraken Eater is, which I think is a blessing. Scott, if I remember correctly, got priority on the second turn and essentially moved Marat, the Shadow Queen. That's the lady, right? Which one's Marathi now? Is it the big snake or is it the...
I just call it big Marathi and small okay. Marathi because I get them confused. So
he moves big Marathi and 10 witch elves over to the right objective. And I just kind of move a little giant up there to contest it. His big blocks. I then move my Gatebreaker up. And it's kind of like we don't really engage each other even in the second round. We play kind of cagey. I'm just within 6 inches of the first objective that comes down. So yeah, he got points when he went first, but I got the points back because I took the objective on the second one. Overall, his Canary come down on the left side, and he's kind of going after my Gatebreaker and my unit of 3 Man Crushers. So we end the second round and it's a tie. Essentially we're same objective, same amount of objective points. Then we put down the other objectives, and I got really lucky in that the objective on my side comes down right where my Kraken Eater is, because he didn't really move up. He stayed with the potential to go after either the middle or the right side if objective, if it came down there. If it was on the left side, I was going to get the Gatebreaker to hop on it. So, and then Scott's, the one that came down in Scott's territory actually ended up coming on the left side of the board, which was fine because I'd moved my Gatebreakers and my Man Crushers up a little bit. One, to try and do a shooting attack into the block of 28 Witch Elves, because I wanted to try and, you know, melt those down as best as I could. I ended up killing 4 in the second round with all the shooting attacks that I had, which, I mean, I take as a blessing, because anytime you can knock down the 20 Witch Elves, it's good. It's less surface area they can get to you. So he ended up grabbing his objective. I still hold the middle one because I outwound him. He went first again on the third round, and what he chose to do was he charged 10 Witch Elves into... Oh, man. 10 Witch Elves and Canary into one of my Man Crushers. I used my other 2 single Man Crushers on the right side to kind of screen him out for my Kraken Eater, which was sitting on the point that was in my territory. He moved 20 Witch Elves, his Canary that he dropped out from off the board onto my Gatebreaker. So he charged them. He never really got them super buffed. He would either get Mind Razor or like his Blessing of Canes and stuff. Like, so they were never really totally buffed, but they still did a ton of damage. My unit of three man crushers got tied in that 20 man knot too, and also little Marathi came in and charged them to tag them, because what I wanted to do on the left side was just push my guys up the board to try and get one round to where I had more wounds on his further objective than mine. Because with Daughters of Cain, I was just expecting like second or third round. Basically third round, I thought I was going to get wiped off the board.
Yeah, they just get more and more killy. I mean, and in his list, they already start off pretty killy with starting in round two. They're basically round two or moved up around with.
Yeah. Well, what actually saved me quite a bit is, you know, the little adjustments to the prayers and Mind Razor, the little adjustments they did to make those more difficult to get off, or at least, you know, really hype them up, kind of made my guys a little more survivable. Third round, essentially, we end up scoring the exact same again. I had wiped down the unit of 20 I ended up wiping the unit of 20 down to basically three witch elves. And that was nice. The Canari, I kind of ignored. My Gatebreaker tanked a lot. Like the Megas the entire tournament tank quite a bit. They can still go down when they get concentrated, but they tanked quite a bit. On the right side of the board, once again, I managed to wipe out a small unit of 10 witch elves over there. And also I took down his Canari life takers as well. So it was basically Big Marathi over there, but he took two of my single unit guys off the board. My single man crushers off the board, and my third man crusher, he had like three wounds left. So by this time, I mean, we were a real meat grinder going on. We went all the way at a time, and we had a little bit extra because we wanted to get through the fourth round. Scott was able to start it, but still we were tied on objective points the entire way through. And I really had only lost two single man crushers. I had one man crusher heavily wounded by itself. And then I had my unit of two man crushers that was wounded. My Kraken Eater hadn't been wounded at all by going into the fourth round. So I'm feeling like if I can get to that third objective, I can probably win by 1 point. That's what I wanted to try and do. If I could get loose. The problem is with the two Marathis, I just couldn't. I never really did enough wounds. I just chose to ignore Big Marathi and Little Marathi, not do anything to him, try and wipe off his screens, try and wipe out his Canari, which I was able to do. Ended up being, when it was all said and done, we tied on objective points at the end of four. I took out quite a bit more of his army than I thought it was going to. I took out the entire unit of 20, took out both Canaries. The Stalkers shot one of my last man crusher off the board. So I technically lost control of, I did lose control of one objective, which is where he was able to deny me. My Gatebreaker finally went down in the fourth go around. They finally chopped out the Cauldron did it. The Cauldron came charging in, and Little Marathi also kind of buzzsawed them quite a bit. So I didn't score any of my auxiliaries. Tell you the truth, I picked the crappiest auxiliaries because I thought his dock list was going to run me over. But I found a lot of inspiration in that first game with how durable they were and how if I just played the objectives, I was able to turn it into quite a bit more of a game than I thought it would be. It was very inspiring to do that against a Hagnar dock list, take it to essentially a draw and then losing off auxiliaries. So that was my first one. I lost, but once again, I had fun.
Sweet.
Well, I'm back. So
that was quick.
I got a call as I was on the way, there that they had it resolved. Somebody was there taking care of boarding dogs and one of them escaped. So yeah, that could have been bad.
My dog, when I got there one time after boarding it, they had a note added to her little printout on her collar that said escape artist. I should have asked them the story on that, but that was my Brittany. But she did know how to climb a chain link fence.
Oh,
that was
always useful.
A pretty neat skill. We had to put up a wood fence because that's how she got out. Anyway. All right. So my game won. I got, you know, I've only played Nurgle 7 of my last 9 games. So I went ahead and played Nurgle again. Got to play Chase. He brought probably the main thing he brought was, what's that big dude's name?
Glotkin.
The Glotkin, which I love that model. It's just one of my favorite models from visually. But he brought the Glotkin and then 40 Blight Kings, and he brought a little Skaven Plague Priest, I think, and then the Harbinger of Decay and another ground hero, kind of like it. So same thing. This one, that the middle of the board was pretty open, so I ended up putting my boats right in a very annoying spot, like always, but probably more annoying than normal because there was just like straight across the middle, as close as they could get. So he could barely fit his Glotkin in between them. And then he gave me first turn. I probably played it too far up. I probably should have just waited turn one, like you said. I considered it. But I was concerned he would get his whole army on the middle, and I just wouldn't be able to get him off that, whatever the middle objective dropped. So I played a little bit. I basically put Ishlian in between the boats, another Ishlian on the other side, and then I moved up one of my three thralls. Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't say this, but I'm playing a reverse tide with 3 units of 10 thralls, 2 turtles, 1 shark, Soulscryer, Tidecaster, Aetherwing, and Shadow Stalkers. So then what I did was I threw my Shadow Stalkers up. I teleported them in front of one of my groups of thralls that was away, and I had an Eidolon, a melee Eidolon. I put it over there to try to kind of keep them out. I thought I was out, but he ended up rolling on his turn, he rolled a 5 on his run roll, and he was +1 to run and got just close enough where he could do his run and charge. But that's anyway. So I kind of had everything set up in the middle with a big shell of the 2 Ishlian to help protect everything. Then he pushed forward into that unit with his big 20 block. But because of the boats, he wasn't able to get more than like 5 or 6 of them in. He had a lot of ways to buff the Blight Kings, but one of the buffs, I think he did it turn 2, but the extra wound each, that was just like, these already have 81 wounds. Now it's got 101 wounds and a 20 block because he had a spell that gave him an extra wound each. Anyway, came through. So turn one, he killed a few Ishlian, and then he was able to wipe my unit of the Shadow Stalkers. So I got them too close to him, basically, and killed a few of the thralls. And then turn 2, this is my, I was playing Reversing the Tides, so I got to fight the start of combat. And he was into quite a bit of my army, but the Eidolon gets to retreat and charge, and one of the turtles was out. So I tried to put both of those at his 5-man block, trying to wipe it. I killed like 6 of them or something, which I thought I'd be able to kill a 10-man block with that. And then I sent thralls on the other flank. I was really trying to kill off his 2 10-man blocks and then come back and focus on the big buffed up 20-man block. And the game, that turn took a really long time because we had so many models all in combat and all scooting around. And then turn 3, he was able to get on 2 of the objective. One of the things he did is he made a mistake and he just got like a half inch out of where one of them had dropped with his Harbinger. So when it went to score, he wasn't actually on his back objective. And that opened up the game for me to, I retreated a shark on it and then went and fought on the other side. And I think we only got through three, but I won. Just, it was a tight game. I might have had a chance otherwise, but that opening gave it to me. That was our game one. All right, Ryan, two.
Round two was Battle for the Pass, right? Or was it Blade's Edge?
It was Blade's Edge.
Okay. So round two was Blade's Edge, and I got paired with the other lovely monkey, Billy Elliott, who's playing Night Haunt. So I was pretty familiar.
And Scott was lucky. He got to play all three of the monkeys we brought.
That's true. That is funny how that worked out. So I ended up playing Billy. And the funny thing is like more than half his army sets up like off the board. So he put two 40 blocks of chain rasps in the grave. He puts 15 blade guys, the Mourn Ghoul, the Spirit Torment, all off the board. So he sets up 10 chain rasps on one side of the board, 10 chain rasps on the other, one Dreadblade Harrow in the middle, one Dreadblade Harrow to the back right corner with Rykonor, and he screens those with five blade geists. Now, I choose to put one Man Crusher in the middle because one of my auxiliaries I chose was bait, and he was my bait. He just needed to die. Then I put the Kraken Eater on top of a building because it was 4 inches or less. So I started him on top of the building, thanks to Longshanks. And then two Man Crushers on the front, two Man Crushers screening in front of him on the left-hand side. Then what I did on the right-hand side is I had my block of three Man Crushers and my Gatebreaker once again. So I'm always, how I'm playing them, I'm basically putting two threats on the side of the board, even if there's a middle objective, and making you pick which side you're going to go after. Billy ended up going first, and he chose, he snuffed out a candle and ended up saving it on a six up, which I still think it's ridiculous that you have to roll the six up after. I think you should be allowed to suffer the wound on Rykonor. That's been my entire belief the whole time. That will continue to be my entire belief. But he ended up saving it, and he didn't end up casting it round one. So he kind of just decided to sit. He wasn't really going to do anything. He moved his guys essentially up onto his side of the objectives, and that was it. So he turned it over to me, and what I decided to do was start the shenanigans. So I had my Kraken Eater on the left-hand side kick the objective, and he kicked the objective towards, kind of halfway towards Billy's objective. And and Billy's like, well, that's interesting. So I kind of moved up on the left-hand side with my two single Man Crushers and my Kraken Eater. This was after I scored and everything. And on the right-hand side, I just, once again, moving up my block of three Man Crushers and moving up my Great Breaker. I end up throwing and pretty much doing a lot of damage on the right-hand side to his 10 block of chain rasps sitting on his side. And I actually get a Man Crusher up to charge and get into him. So I'm owning pretty much all the objectives, not all the objectives, but like I get up essentially. I take one point lead. So that's when we roll for priority going into two. And this is where it gets blurry, because honestly, what started to happen was no matter what fight I got into, his ignore rend was very annoying, because a lot of what Sons of Behemoth relies on is rend to get damage through. So if they just ignore rend, I'm rolling like fours and threes. And if the Morangul's around, I'm rolling worse than that. So like minus one to hit in a bubble. So from round two on, it turns into a grind as far as my standpoint. Now, what I get lucky on is I actually get to choose to burn an objective. So because I moved my man crusher, I'm going to move my man crusher up in the middle. I burn my side of the middle objective first because my Kraken Eater is moving the objective on the left-hand side wherever he goes. So I'm doing really well, it looks like. Like, I get to go start of turn two, and I just feel like everything's going great because I still haven't seen most of Billy's army. He hasn't dropped it yet. So I get on his side of the board. My Kraken Eater continues to kick the left side of the objective up the board round two. And I essentially put one objective on top of another one, thanks to the 2d6 I roll. So on the left-hand side, I've kicked the objective all the way to his side of the board. And I just have to charge all my guys into a single block of 10 chain rasps because everything else is still off the board for him up there. And I can have one man crusher hold one objective and my Kraken Eater holds the other. And I outwound him on the other side anyways, because Kraken Eater counts as 20 wounds and a man crusher counts as 10. So as long as I take one chain rasp off, I'm good. I can own both objectives on one side and I'll just keep moving up with my gate breaker on the other side. Or I'll leave him camping on the right side. So what I choose is I choose to leave my gatebreaker camping within 6 of my back objective. And I choose to charge my block of 3-man crushers up to his other side of the objective. So I can try and take that away. And it works out pretty well. Like I do really good damage against, of course, his chain rasps. My middle guy, he just kind of, because the middle objective was burned, I kind of just moved my way up and start fighting for the other objective point. So it worked out pretty well. Then Billy went second that turn. That's when he was able to cast cogs. He was able to bring all his guys off the board. He set up a 40 block of chain rasps behind my great gate breaker, a 40 block of chain rasps in front of my unit of 3. And I actually misremembered because I still screened with them on the right hand side. Crap. See, like I said, it was all a blur. And then on the left hand side, he drops his Morgul, 15 Blade Geists, and Spirit Torment. He ends up rolling a 10 plus, so he gets to instantly attack with the Blade Geists on the left hand side. He makes the charge with the Spirit Torment. He makes the Night Inch charge with the Morgul, but he doesn't get to attack with them instantly on the left-hand side. The Blade Geists do pretty decent damage into my Kraken Eater, but he split the attacks between my Kraken Eater and a Man Crusher, one single Man Crusher unit. So he didn't get really good surface area, which worked for me. But even re-rolling, he still did good damage against the Kraken Eater. On the right hand side, he makes the charge, 10 plus charge with his chain rasps, gets to attack my unit of 3 man crushers, but doesn't really get anything done thanks to terrain once again working into my advantage. I swing back. Once we get into combat, he gets to go again. So he goes with the Blade Geist again, takes out a single man crusher, does more damage to the Kraken Eater. On the right-hand side, he does... I swing with my unit of 3, like, do major damage to the first block of 40 that I actually managed to get into me chain rasps. I think I killed, like, 20 total with my man crushers all swinging into him. Gatebreaker, he's just kind of sitting there waiting to see what he can do. Never really gets to swing at anything in the second round. We trade back and forth pretty decent. Morgul does a lot of damage to a man crusher, but doesn't take it down. Harrow gets in and does some decent damage. So like round two, going into 3, we're still playing it pretty close. But I went priority. I choose to go second. I burn another objective. So I've burned 2 objectives. I don't on my side. I've moved one up. So I'm babysitting it with my Kraken Eater. And then I burn another objective, so that way I don't have to worry about it. And we essentially end at the end of round 3. what happens is I've taken down the complete one block of 40 chain rest, and I'm decimating the other one pretty well with my gatebreaker. On the left-hand side, I finally chunk down the blade guys to where they're kind of insignificant. And the way it all ends is basically, because we burned objectives and because I was able to move an objective, I end up winning on objective points, and I've managed to melt down enough of his army. It's just Nighthaunt just aren't sustainable. The one thing that I didn't like about that is, once again, he ignored Rend. So even when I was doing damage, it felt like it wasn't a lot, even though sometimes it was. The little guys, the little man crushers with their clubs, like in groups of that one block of three, it gets 30 attacks, threes and threes, really clutch in some situations, especially against like horde units. So two, I win against Nighthaunt, which, I mean, it's Nighthaunt, but still the way Billy plays it, keeping half his army off the board, it's very challenging to play against. I think that if objectives didn't get burned, I think I would have probably had a more difficult time with that. I probably would have lost, actually, because he's got more bodies to camp stuff, and I'd have to run around the board cleaning stuff up, and that would have been nearly impossible. So, win round two.
Okay, so my round two, I played Scott's Daughters of Cain. He ended up giving me turn one, and I tried to do my best to take advantage of that, because before he gets some of his buffs off and stuff, I ended up getting both my units of Ishlian into one into Witch Elves and one into his Heart Renders. I think that's the melee version's name. And between my turtle shooting and those two, I was able to kill off five Heart Renderers and kill off nine Witch Elves and then one Battle Shock. So I don't know, when I look at his list, I feel like you either got to deal with the heroes or deal with the battle line or all the Witch Elves and stuff, and I think the Witch Elves are what are going to get you. So I was glad to kill a few, you know, get rid of a couple threats there. And then I also tied up his shadow, or what are they called, his snake shot stock shooters. I was able to get into them. I killed one of them, but I was just able to get in combat with them, so that way they have to retreat, because he's using being able to double attack with them or double shoot with them. And on the hit back, he didn't do very much. Oh, the other thing I did, and I kind of moved up all my army, and I think the best thing I did was I did a deep strike of the my Shadow Stalkers. So I sent them like right in the middle, 9 inches away, as close as I could get to his army. And basically that forced his 30 block of Witch Elves that was the only target they could kill turn one. So, you know, it's an easy charge, auto charge for him, but that way he's not getting in and with all his buffs and killing something more important to my army. And then, turn two, maintained priority. We got to go first and attack, start a combat. I got my whole army in and I killed. It was kind of just it, when it happens, when you're trying, what you're trying to do happens. And it's sometimes, then it's a feel bad almost for me. Cause it's like, oh man, I killed all his Witch Elves. I killed his cauldron. I killed, basically, I hadn't done any damage. I did like two damage to Marathi, but I wasn't trying to fight either of the Marathis. I was just trying to kill everything else. And it was basically, we played another turn, but it was basically over at that point. So got the win versus kind of, you know, Daughters is a scary list, scary army, but it just lined up for me just right. So
yeah, the key is, ignore Marathi.
Yeah.
What?
Like, there's no point.
I don't think that's...
Buck was saying that that was the strategy. He just didn't follow it, right?
Yeah. It's true.
No. You got to go after Marathi and put everything into her until she's dead.
Yeah, you try to get her down to one wound by, you know, but not actually kill her.
That's the only way you can do it.
Like, even little Marathi hits hard. That's the crazy
part. Oh, yeah. Yeah, she hit harder than I thought. She, like, put, like, yeah. 6 wins into an idol on that's on a 3-up save or something.
Yeah, right. Okay, so we're at round 3.
Yep.
Which round 3 was actually Blade's Edge. Right?
Round 3 is Battle for the Pass.
God, see, I don't even know what we're... Yeah. Tells you how much. Well, round 3 I wasn't looking forward to because I get to play Chase. So... A lot of Blight Kings.
Don't worry, I softened them up for you.
You did not soften them up at all. The only thing I'm glad I got to do, I will say this. Round 3, I went in, and knowing who I was up against, I was like, I cannot do enough damage against his list. Like, his units just... I did not know that he could add a wound to it, number one, but I knew that they were vicious. I knew they were mean, and I knew that I wasn't going to outdamage them. So I just tried to focus on objective play. And what I did is start of round 1, I kicked that objective and I kicked it out of my territory. So it was no longer 4 points. It was just 2 points. So what I decided to do, I'm not even going to bother saying battle points because, or battle, like too much of what went on in the battle, because honestly, it was try and get to the middle, try and own one objective. And all I wanted to do was to go up one side of the board, which was essentially the left side of the board. I was going to kick the objective to the left side of the board and try and get around him to get it into his territory to where I could possibly score 2 4-points. And that was it. That was what I was doing. I didn't really have that plan to start, but it ended up working that way because once I saw where his 20 block of 20 went, I ran away from it, except with my single units of Man Crushers, which I kind of fed to them. But the way that those freaking...
Yeah, they all with all the buffs, it's like,
yeah,
40 damage or something.
Well, it's, and the exploding damage. Dice, man. The dice that explode. So he added on like 30 extra hits to one roll.
Oh, yeah, he had that happen to me. It was like, it wasn't 30. I think it was only like 7 guys attacking, but they did 21 extra.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to add 21 attacks. It's like,
Yeah. And on top of that, he's got the, and this is not on Chase. This is more about the Nurgle design. The thing that kills me is he freaking, just adding one wound to whatever he wants to. So it goes from like a 4 to a 5 wound. That's just insane to me.
I hadn't run up against that with all my Nurgle. I don't think I had. And I was like, so this is 101 wounds. No, I can't even kill 81 wounds.
Yeah.
That's 101.
I think I killed 3 units. I think that's all I killed. I killed three models off different units. I never did significant damage to any of his block of knights. It was not happening. The only thing, the big highlights I'll say is the Kraken Eater was kicking the objective off the left-hand side. I retreated after the Gatebreaker took out the tree, which I told Chase at the beginning, if he just lets my Gatebreaker destroy his tree, I will shake hands and concede. So I managed to kill the tree at the end of 2. And that's when I kind of realized with the way my Kraken Eater was going that I could probably maybe objective win it if stuff survived. But the problem is nothing survived because even when I retreated over his units to get the back objective for 4 points, he just crashed in and killed everything. Like his small block of knights, which
even if he gets like 6 or 7 Blight Kings in, their damage, I mean, they're so tanky, and then their damage is really good.
Yeah, and he rolled really well for whenever I, you know, and also they do mortal wounds back for you if you kill one. So you may kill one, but it's still one mortal wound coming back to you, which added up on my Gatebreaker. Like, he was the only one to actually kill units, but they kept exploding on him. And it was just, yeah, it's not fun. What made it fun was playing against Chase. Chase is a real fun guy to play against. He has a good attitude. I lost. I actually survived to 4, and the only reason why I lost is because I got tabled. I was actually ahead on objective points, and but I got cornered on the side of the board and just destroyed. So ended up going 1-2, but I competed really well against Daughters of Cain. I competed really well against Nurgle, just playing objectives, kicking them around, And I did what I wanted to do, which was I destroyed somebody's terrain piece, which was actually the only army that I played that brought terrain that game, which was the most disappointing part. People need to bring more terrain against Sons of Behemoth. I'm just telling you.
I'll bring three boats next time if you want.
I'll be more than happy to smash as many of them as possible.
All right, so my game... So with the two wins, I was playing in, I ended up playing James Matthew and for game three. So Bow for the Pass, he had 30-30 of Wardens, which those are tough to deal with. And then 20 Sentinels and then Big T and Stone Mage and a Crazy Cat Lady. So he had a stand-in for the terrain piece of the little waterfall thing. So turn one, he had his stuff castled up, like, up in, like, to one side and really tight castle, like, with all of his 60 wardens in the front. And he took turn one and... He had a spell portal, so I tried to dispel it, but it was an auto cast on a 10, and I only rolled a 9 for my one dispel, so that was all my dispels. And he put the spell portal out right in the middle. I had my army spread out as far as I can, but Bow for the Pass, you're on the short edge of the board, so you can't spread as wide as you can if you're on the other orientation. So I had my stuff spread out, but he was able to put the spell portal like right in the middle of everything, and so that's a, what is it, 18 times 2 plus a couple inches, so like 38 inch bubble of death. Turn 1 on his searing white light, he did 30 mortals to my army just from that one spell, and then he'd put up some buffs. He had to shoot off the aether wings. I placed them just right to where he could only shoot at them, so the 10 mortals he put into them are kind of wasted, but man, 40 mortals from long range is hard for anybody to deal with, really. But
it's nice.
And then he had a bunch of bravery debuff stuff going, so I was minus 2 bravery, and he was trying to basically battle shock. My army's all 6 bravery except for the Eidolon, so I lost some thralls and then more Rand bravery, so those thralls, I had one unit of thralls that actually got to fight. The others died before they even could get into combat. So my turn, he buffed like crazy his 30 block of wardens that were right in the front. They're my only thing I could get to. So I was trying to decide, do I try to play for a double turn and like not fight those wardens and just try to get position? But I was concerned if I get double turned, then the game is over. I had completely dead before I even do anything. So I went ahead and pushed into those wardens. I was looking at the buffs that they had now and remembering it's crazy. So plus 1 to save, reroll 1s to wound, reroll 1s to save. They had 5 up after save. They had added a negative 1 rend because I charged them. They were netted, so they didn't get to pile in, but they were Shining Company, so they should have piled only one anyway. But even with all those debuffs going, 5 ups were mortals on his hits, right? So they had like 8 different buffs going on that unit. It's still kind of funny. But, dude, it doesn't matter they can't pile in with that 3-inch range. That's just so good. Mm-hmm. So, like, I fought with the unit, and then he fought back, and I thought he had killed my turtle, like, he had it. I took the turtle off the board, and then we remembered I had my boat saves. So I made 2 mortal wound boat saves to keep my. So my ancient turtle, which is on a 2-up save, rerolling 1s because he was mystic shielded. It didn't matter because he's doing all mortal wounds, and so it got down to 2 wounds turn 1, and then I killed 12. I think with the turtle, an Eidolon, a shark, and thralls into that unit, I killed 12. Wardens, and then he pushed that battle shock back on my thralls, and they were negative 15 to their bravery, so ooh, they're gone. And then he got priority turn 2, did about 30 more mortals, And I mean, I played out turn two and three. I did steal his back objectives by teleporting my Shadow Warriors, but I only had an Eidolon left and like three eels and the Shadow Stalkers. And then he also had two different spells. I looked at the wording, and I think he misread one of the wordings, but basically he has two different Bellicor spells. He casts it on a unit. One's from the Stone Mage, I think, and one's from the Cathalar and one's from the lore book. But so two of my units, even in my fight at the start of combat turn, my Eidolon and my Shark didn't get to fight because he casts the spell on them. And if he rolls above your bravery with 2d6, then you don't get to do certain actions. And he neg-2'd the whole board bravery. He also neg-1'd each of their bravery from pushing to Cathalar, neg-1 bravery from them spinning Aether Quartz. So both those units were neg-3 bravery.
Which spell was that?
So there's two different spells. One is Lore of the High Peaks. One is Crippling Vertigo. The other is Darkness of the Soul. So they're basically, one is casting on a 6, one's a 7, wholly within 18, and one's within 18. I also think I wasn't wholly within 18. I think he thought they were the exact same spell with just different names, but there's a few differences. Like one doesn't let you pile in, move, or charge, and the other one doesn't let you move, charge, or shoot, or fight. So like I should have been able to actually fight with one of my units, but it wouldn't have changed the outcome. Being able to Bellicor two units, I know if things are like 10 bravery, it doesn't happen a lot of the time, but if he can -3 to your bravery as well, then it's not that hard to roll over your bravery. So that kind of was even strong on top of me losing most of my army to mortal wounds from distance. But so I got kicked pretty good. I've been trying to come up with what was a good counter to that type of build, and there's not a lot. Teclis with his six new spells, now he has, he can teleport a unit anytime he wants, and he can bravery debuff, and he can, I think they gave him way too much.
Nerf Bat needs to make the rounds again.
I think it does. I think they gave him way too much.
There's not enough data.
Yeah, not enough data.
Did you...
The old salt.
So I ended up third, though. I did score my two cheeky auxiliaries and then Joe V ended up winning with his, Hammerhall? He's been playing, he was saying he's been working his way through the book, and like each tournament I've gone to, he's played a different city. So I really respect that, and that he could win with like Hammerhall. It was a real shooty list. It was interesting. I hadn't seen one with that much shooting and all of the little, it's mostly like not great shooting, but it's a lot of it. You know what I mean?
From what I heard from recaps of all his
didn't
games,
he like win game two or everyone quit round
pretty
two?
Much. He never went past round two. I think even one person quit after round one because of how many wounds he put on the board. I don't remember who it was, but I thought I heard that.
Yeah, like, I think my list would have been a pretty good matchup, would have probably been a good counter to him, just with me ignoring Rend and me being able to force a shooting where I wanted it. But, yeah, it was
brutal.
It was a great job
to play against from what I heard. There were a lot of mean lists at this small tournament. Like there was a definite, I wouldn't say pecking order, but there was a definite like brutality to some of them that they came up with, which is fine. I mean, it's good. You got to be competitive, but yowza. We need some balance. That's all I'm saying.
Nerf Bat. I guess that kind of segues pretty good into one of our listener questions we got here is, we think 3.0, Jesus Christ. I almost said C3PO. Anyways, 3.0 coming out this summer.
Yeah, he was asking if we think it'll be out here this year. I think it will. I think they want to do it in like July, but it'll end up being August or September. Yeah. But I think it'll still come out one way or another.
Like what month did 2.0 drop? I feel like that was late summer.
Didn't it drop? Was that the one that dropped like the weekend of Monkey, like the new book came out?
I know
there was a book that came, the one of the GHBs came out the weekend of Monkey.
Yeah, that was 2019, I think.
2019, yeah.
Was it 2019?
Yeah, that was 2019.
It was back when I was still playing Nighthaunt. It was just when Legions of Grief came out.
Because I remember you could buy the book at the thing, but we weren't playing with the rules yet because it was so new.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of evidence to support that it's closer. I think that the perfect evidence of that is they are taking a pause right now. I think that's evidence that they're gearing up for a big release soon.
So you think like June?
They said a couple weeks. When was that? Earlier this week?
Well, that's a couple week pause, but yeah, they're like moving factories or something.
Yeah. I'm just thinking they got to get that shit lined up. They got to make sure they have all their stock, and then they got to tease, then they got to release. So you're,
right. I would say at least a couple months.
Yeah, at least a month to get their shit between the tease and the release. So
July, August,
late June, early July. I think maybe they're going to come out with 3.0 kind of the same time that they did with the original AOS, which was July 4th. So I'd say first week of July.
America Day.
Hell yeah. it's kind of funny scrolling through some of the Facebook groups, people posting that video with the rumors rundown and whatnot.
Yeah.
There's some people saying this, you shouldn't be spreading this. This is, you know, not nice to the playtesters and the people who've worked so hard on these rules and blah, blah, blah. And you're spreading all this shit out there. And it's like, who fucking cares? How is that disrespectful to them? Like, you really think these things aren't already printed and already set in stone? I don't think they're going to the printer right now if we're shooting for a summer release. That shit should have been done a long time ago. And the fact that we haven't heard anything until this kind of quasi rumor came out is fairly remarkable given the kind of stuff that we used to be getting. So,
yep.
It's true. But I mean, it fits, and I know we're probably not going to go in depth to it, but just listening to what the video is, I think there's a lot of good pluses to it. I think they outline a lot of good things. There are one or two things that concern me, but I think it's headed in a pretty good direction.
I think the biggest thing, you know, I don't want to really dive in and analyze everything, but one of the things that stuck out to me was the whole buffs and debuffs are capped at one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's gonna be huge. I think that needs to happen.
Yeah, I mean that. I like the thought of that, but it changes like a bunch of war scrolls.
Yes, it does. And it
impacts. I mean, there's so, that. My concern, and that's what I was talking with somebody yesterday, was like, man, I just don't want it to be like, oh, we released it, but war scrolls are coming soon, like 90 days later.
But is it going to be something like when 8th edition 40K, where you had the index for everything?
Yeah.
Oh, right. here's a big spreadsheet. You got to look up what the new movement is and what the new whatever else is.
Basically, they had it grouped in. I have my book here somewhere. They had it grouped by army and just kind of gave, you know, new profiles on everything. It was a little soft cover book. And you had one for Xenos, one for, you know, Space Marines and other stuff.
But if you just like if you take one rule of saying everything's capped at one. You don't really have to reprint war scrolls for that. That's the beauty of it.
You just have to, change points. If there's a spell that does D3 extra attacks on like the Archregent, well, that's not as valuable anymore because it's only one. I mean,
No. I don't think it was adding extra attacks.
Is it just to hit or
it was
to
just
wound or
it
save?
Was just like you only stack the minus to hit or the plus one to hit or the minus, you know, it was saying the actual, it doesn't affect attacks characteristics.
Okay. So you think it's just hit wounds and saves?
I think it's just hit wounds and saves. I think that's what's capped. And I think that's what needs to. Well, no, I bet you rend isn't capped. I think you still have to keep the rend in, but if you reduce somebody's ability to get minuses,
to hit, that kind of stuff.
Make stuff not as bad. Cause I mean, how many armies do we have that can get to minus two to hit or can get to where their save is plus, you know, whatever,
plus two,
like that if they just cap that one, hit, save, and wound, they cap those that you can only add one to each one of those modifiers. Mm-hmm. You don't have to overhaul war scrolls.
Do you think they should do it to like cast or dispel, or leave those be?
No, I think that those need to be capped too, because I mean, we're seeing the madness that is going on in the magic phase as well. And it's out of control. That should probably be capped too. The only one I think they should leave alone is attack characteristics. I think you should be allowed to pump that up as much as you want to, because that's like adrenaline. And depending on the hit profile, there's if you start messing with that, you will mess with a lot of war scrolls, because there's a lot of poor hit profiles that need those extra attacks.
Right. It's designed to be designed to be poor because you get extra attacks.
Yeah.
Like corn and flesh eaters.
Yeah. Sorry for the segue.
Main ones I can think of.
Okay. We got another question here, which is, what is the best Chaos God and why? So I'm obviously going to say Tzeentch, because, I mean, think about it. You get extra limbs. You get a few tentacles if you want, a couple more eyes, and you can blast people into nothingness with your mind bullets. So Tzeentch all the way, baby.
So are we talking originals, or can we have, because you know, there's the great horned rat.
You pick what you want, my man.
Great horned rat is like the redheaded stepchild of the chaos gods.
No, I don't think
if you want to go with that.
I don't think so. But you could go.
No, with no. I will stick with Khorne. Blood for the blood god, skulls for the skull throne. I think that he is actually, to me, one of the best, because he like hates magic, and I absolutely hate the magic phase. So I'm all about it. I'm all about Khorne.
I guess your dog agrees.
She does.
All right, Paul.
I'm gonna go with the curveball. I'm gonna say Sigmar. He's a chaos god. You just don't know it yet. He's hiding it in the background there.
Okay, I need some explanation here.
Well, like all the Order armies, you know, you think they're good until you actually read what they are, and they're evil as well. They're all stealing souls, and you know, everybody's in the Orders. They're their own bad guys for their own reason. So I don't know. I didn't want to go with one of the original ones, so I made up my own
Sigmar
box.
Okay.
I'm not going to defend my answer very much. So okay. If you want to disagree, that's good.
All right. I guess that answers our next question as well, which is, what dark god did Paul sell his souls to for the wins?
The god of TTS.
I was going to say the fish dudes. Whoever so, that I know.
Yeah, I guess TTS does translate well to the tabletop.
It's true.
Yep.
I'm gonna say who's the dark elf god? Is it Malarian?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna say Malarian.
What do you think, Ryan?
I was gonna say Idneth. Who's the Idneth god? Like, is it what
Teclis?
Fish? It used to Teclis be Teclis made before him, he threw him in the
he
trash.
Was like, oh, I need to abort these things.
Yeah, he put them down the toilet and flushed them.
Well, no, still gonna say Teclis. Like, you miss your daddy, so that's why you play Idneth.
There we go.
Daddy Teclis, you still got the daddy issues because he beat up on you yesterday, huh?
Yeah, he did.
Oh man.
It was a good, it was a solid whipping.
Yeah, Teclis is broken. Can't wait for him to get nerfed. Maybe mm-hmm. he'll get the Illarial treatment. Oh, that'd be so sweet. Make him a little piece of shit. Yeah, my Illarial has not seen the light of day in a fucking long time.
Dude, they could make him like two wounds, but as long as he has like his supers. Four auto casts with 18 different spells to choose from. He's gonna be. You could put him at like 1,000 points, and he'd still be. Maybe not 1,000, but you know, any basically 1,000, and he's still a problem.
Yeah. It's. It's rough.
I mean, I guess if you put up his points a little bit more, then you can't bring as much support. But I mean, who's scarier, Nagash or Teclis?
Teclis.
Which one would you not want on the other side of the board? And then who's worth more points, right? Isn't Nagash like way more expensive?
Nagash is like what, a solid 800-700 point sink? Like it's a majority portion of your army.
Needs to have some pretty major changes, so.
Well, Seraphon players, you should be very scared with the new Croak model coming out, because something tells me they may, I hope, and if the world is right and true, he will be adjusted when the new model comes out.
So, now that Ryan wants it, it's going to be better. So.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. He's going to go down 20 points, and he's going to get more casting.
He'll be better than Teclis.
All right, so Teclis is 660 and Nagash is 880.
Yeah,
Teclis. And we both agreed that Teclis is scarier than Nagash. Is better than Nagash.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, they should just swap points.
Yeah, sounds good. I'll take it. Yeah. Well, I don't know about 660 and Nagash. Yeah. Make them both
880. Yeah, we'll do that then. That's probably better. Okay, so next thing up is we got our Patreon giveaway, which I was able to get my hands on a hard copy of the Cursed City novel. So we will be giving that away today. I was pretty excited about it. I didn't think I'd find one, but I went over to, Board Wipe over in Owosso. If you've never been there, it's on 86th. And it's pretty much right next to the movie theater. So pretty cool little place. Not a lot of space for gaming, but there is a, there's a few tables and they do have a decent amount of Games Workshop stuff, but it's mostly Magic and D&D it looked like. Cool little shop. You guys, if you're in the Tulsa, Owosso area, go check it out. So let's go ahead and give this shit away. I kind of wanted to read it first before I send it out the door, but I haven't had a chance. But it's a nice little book. It's pretty solid. So let me get my dice roller up. Make sure I take Charles out of this. Just because I don't want Charles winning. I'm just kidding, Charles. You're still included. All right, here we go. All right, so winner of the Cursed City hardback novel is Casey Murphy.
Hey,
nice, up, congrats! Yeah.
I will. I'll get with you shortly, and yeah, get you this book. So, pretty sweet little book, and nice cover on it and everything. So it'll look great on your shelf.
Hopefully, it's good. I'm interested. I've heard a lot of good things about the author.
Yeah, I definitely want to read it, but I'll have to grab another copy or something. So, but yeah, if you want to get in on our next Patreon giveaway, give us a subscribe over there on Patreon and you'll get added to the next one. So, it's probably going to be maybe two to three weeks before our next podcast, just because I'm on vacation until second week of May. So I'm pretty excited about that. I'm probably gonna be out of town a lot. So that's it for us for this podcast. We'll see you probably early middle of May. You guys got anything else?
No, just see ya.
My team beaten down might be in first place in this world's tournament. We got two wins this week so far. Yeah. I gotta get the third win tonight.
Oh, don't fuck it up, Paul.
All right.
Don't screw it up.
Smell you later, guys.
Bye.
Later, nerds. You should always keep your tip clear.